entirety of the Super Smash Bros. Community. This is Beyond the Metagame. I'm your host, Peon, this week live from Sakurai's basement. I'm joined, as always, by wonderful co-host, AV. AV, how you doing, big guy?
Hey, I'm doing great. This is where all of the weird Smash ideas go to die.
Yeah, I see some pretty inappropriate depictions of Isabelle over there. I don't know what's up with that.
All I know is that I see a drafted moveset for Masahiro Sakurai. You know, the game designers actually considered it. They probably considered it for no longer than 10 minutes. But they officially considered putting in Sakurai.
I honestly think, funny enough, I don't think that we would mind. I think the community would actually be in favor of that. Like, if he was playable in DLC, I would be hyped. That'd be ridiculous. His moveset is just like he's like Pichu where he hurts himself. Like, he just develops carpal tunnel syndrome mid game.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I feel like it's really hard to hate Sakurai. Like, the guy puts in like ridiculous hours for us who really keep asking more of him. You get, like, every time you get, like, a blog post, or every time, like, something's posted on any social media outlet, there's, like, everyone, all they're doing is just asking for their, like, favorite character.
Plus, this man really knows how to furnish a basement, I do have to say. But, week, we're talking about defeat. We're talking about, you know, what is loss? You know, how can we turn those losses into learning experiences? And even, what makes a good winner?
Yeah, sure. So this week, we're going to get into, kind of defining loss first. What are the different types of losses? How to approach each one of them? The kind of emotions that you feel with loss? Is it okay to be emotional? How do we deal with these emotions? And how do we convert them into something productive? And how do we turn them into learning experiences? And finally, wrapping it up, how do we learn from winning? Even though that losses are generally viewed as the stronger learning experience, we also, as players, need to be able to learn regardless of how we're leaving the battlefield.
So before we get into all that proper, I want to do a little housekeeping. You know, gonna flex my global studies degree once again, because I have some things to announce.
Tell me, dude.
So we've been keeping track of who's listening. And I have some exciting news on that front. We have viewers from, or listeners rather, from Spain, India, Sweden, Canada, and the craziest one of all, Germany. I think like half of our viewership in the last week has been like some drunken Oktoberfest Germans who are just like, man, I really just want to listen to some Smash Brothers podcasting right now. Like, they left the party early to go listen to some Beyond the Metagame. Shout outs to my homies all around the world. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I was genuinely very surprised, and I welcome everyone from across the world, and I'm really excited that we are starting to develop an audience outside of America.
So we'll be right back in just 1 second. Welcome back to Beyond the Metagame. This week, me and Avi are talking about defeat. How do you handle it? And what is it? Avi, just off the bat, you know, how do you define loss, just generally within the confines of competitive Smash 4?
So there's a lot of different ways that we can interpret loss. A lot of things in general in a competitive environment or competitive scene can be viewed as a loss. Some of the examples that we would want to get into are losing a really close match, getting upset by a player who is supposed to lose to you or is seeded lower than you, or you feel like you always win against, not making your region's PR, not being able to control your character to the best of your ability, or losing to a bracket demon. These are all experiences that can be categorized as losses, And I think it's important that we kind of address each one and address how to move on from each one of these things.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for success in Smash. There's a lot of goals that you could accomplish. You know, we've been over quite a few of them, you know, whether your goals are competitive in nature or relate more to, you know, broader things like becoming a better TO, stuff like that, right? But as you define, I mean, there's stuff like, you know, losing that last game three, last hit on stream match, your homies are watching, and you just are unable to clutch it out, right? And there's also those broader kind of, you know, yeah, it's broader ideas like not making your PR, or maybe not getting a certain spot in your PR that you really wanted to achieve. And it's important, I think, you know, a lot, dealing with these losses has a lot in common. You know, there's you can approach a lot of these in the same way. But I guess just to start it off, I'd be like, how do you approach losing a really tight match? Let's say evenly matched opponent. You know, maybe you guys are pretty even set record historically, and it's an important match. You know, top five of your local, and you're just unable to clutch it out. You know, what is your initial thought process?
So there's kind of a lot of things that go into it. Normally, as someone who isn't that emotional, I don't really have any strong feelings associated with my losses other than the ones that were either really, really close or ones that had a lot of context on the line. One thing would probably be with someone with like players that I haven't ever been able to beat. Really close matches with players that I haven't ever been able to beat, I'm always like thinking about specific things in the match that I could have like easily switched to make it go right. And it's often after the game to isolate certain events and to isolate specific moments where you think you could have won the game if you did something different. I think that's a little unhealthy, although I will admit that I've fallen into that. I think that I'm kind of getting into a few of the habits that people kind of fall into when they go through a loss. A lot of them are unavoidable, but yeah, focusing on one thing, that happens to me a lot when I lose a really close set or a really important set, being a little emotionally distraught. Again, I'm not one who really shows a lot of emotions after losing. I really try to focus on memorize what just went on in that match. Every single time I got hit, every single time I died, I try to really like ingrain that into my memory before it goes away. But other than that, I've really managed to turn it into as big of a learning experience as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, you referenced your initial emotional respect. You know, even though you cite yourself as not being very emotional, I'd agree with that. But, you know, you still do feel emotion, right? You're not a robot. And plenty of people do. And it's hard to blame them for being emotional because we do, you know, Smash is a community that operates on a win-loss basis. You know, people's results are defined by the sets they win and the sets they lose. And because Smash is such a meritocracy in so many instances, you know, you get a lot of clout, you get a lot of respect based on how you perform. Not only how good you are, but how well you perform. You know, and it's easy to understand why a lot of people take losses really heavily.
I definitely agree with that.
I think a huge advantage, like long term, you know, as a competitor, tracing your history as a competitor, your career in quotation marks, or maybe you do have a career if you're a good enough player. You know, a lot of the great players are defined by their ability to process these kind of close last stock, last hit losses. We've cited in previous episodes the fact that the best smashers of all time also are the ones that have accumulated the most losses, you know, due to their high tournament participation.
Right. And like every time you show up to a tournament, there's only going to be one person who walks away with less than two losses. Yeah, I love that statistic. It's just a beautiful thing. Like the better players have just lost more than you. Like no matter what, no matter how you like slice it, they have lost more than you.
Yeah. So what do you think the difference is between, you know, an average Joe? Let's say your average Smash player maybe goes 2-2 in his local tournaments. What's the difference between how they handle a loss and how the best of the best handle losses, like from a psychological perspective?
So I actually think that there is a bit of a weird assumption we're making there. We're making the assumption that better players handle losses better. I think maybe on the general, that is likely true because you improve by looking at your losses. But I actually think on the whole, people don't handle losses well in general. There's very few players, there's even examples of a lot of top players who are clearly like very emotional and like say stuff on social media or throw their controllers that are unable to handle the emotions from losing. And I think we see that like cascading down into mid and lower level. Although it is very likely that people in mid and low level are unable to control these emotions. I think one really important thing that I touched on was the fact that getting into this emotional storm and letting these things take over your brain basically removes the ability to introspect and to reflect on the match that just happened. All of these things that just happened are being erased in your mind from basically the cortisol that is flowing through your brain, through your body, the adrenaline, and you're literally erasing the ability to reflect on the things that just happened. I think that's a really important thing. I don't think that everyone should be held to such a high standard that they shouldn't feel emotions after a loss. Again, even though I would quote myself as being less emotional, I'm not immune to it, which is why I definitely empathize with it. I think that it's okay to be emotional in that being emotional shows that you care. I don't think that it's... I wouldn't even like recommend people be like me and to not have emotions after set. It means that you really care about being competitive, and that means you really like... That means that it's like a super important thing for you. However, when it limits your ability to think about the game, I think that's when I'd like to cut it off.
Yeah, well, fair enough. You started off that by saying, you know, we're making the assumption that top players do handle loss as well. And, you know, you went on to talk about the emotions of it all. And I gotta say, man, I love the emotions. I love seeing the passion. When I see a player lose and they're mad about it, they're upset about it, you know, they really feel it. It's just, it's taken over their posture. I love seeing that, dude, because that is just so much better than apathy. You know, if you lose a close set, or even not a close set, maybe you get destroyed. Maybe you lose a match that you were projected to lose and you're still upset by it. Hell yeah, man. I want you to own that, and I want you to channel that. But that said, I do think, you know, it's important to be self-aware in these moments of emotional expression. Let's say after that set, after grand finals. Oh, let's be realistic. Let's say in losers round four, you take the L, right? And, you know, you're pissed about it. You walk out of the venue, you get some fresh air, you're pacing back and forth, and you're angry. Good. That's step one, though. That can't be the end of it. After you cool off, you have to channel that energy, channel that passion constructively. And like you said, Abby, I think it's important to note that you can't be constructive and be in a heightened emotional state simultaneously. So I would invite you to take that energy, and after you cool off, think about, okay, what did I do? How did I die? What mistakes did I made? What mistakes did I make? And how can I go about fixing these issues? Abby, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that... I love the way that you summed up how like the emotional journey that you're taken through and how being emotional with the game is actually really important to the vitality of competitive Smash as a whole. I think to tie in my previous point with what you asked me, I would like to say that even though a lot of the top players and a lot of the high level players, when they get really emotional, they're still really conscientious of the ways that they lost, or the ways that they got hit, or like just any time that they lost neutral. And even if they're not, a lot of these players have their matches streamed. So even if they're not like even there in the moment and they just go outside and start screaming at the world, they will put in they will put in the time to go back right after the tournament finishes, and they will watch that match that they lost.
Right.
They will go through that VOD, watch every single time they got hit, every single time that they lost neutral, and they will have as little ego as, like as possible about it. One thing that I've seen, one trend that I've observed in the Smash community, or I suppose anything in general, is that people will love to watch and rewatch their winning sets on stream. It's fun. Like, it's not, it's legitimately fun. I have definitely rewatched like my closest set that I've played in grand finals where I clutched it out in like in a ridiculous like game five set. Of course, I'm going to go back and rewatch that a bunch of times, but it's actually really harmful to only watch your winning sets. If you're not watching your losing sets, you're not watching yourself get exposed. You're not being able to relive all of your mistakes. And often, it often is the case that you are making the same mistakes and you are like basically using the same habits in all of your losing games. You don't suddenly go from having a spot dodge habit to a roll habit or to a get up attack habit. I mean, maybe you have all of them, but if we were to only like limit the habits to one thing, you likely elicit those factors in every single loss that you have.
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, I think, you know, that is a natural segue to a concept that people talk about all the time, which is the whole, you know, you should use a loss as an opportunity to learn. You know, there's winning and there's learning, people so often say, you know, and it is kind of not obvious advice, but at least overstated advice. You know, people really say that sentiment quite a bit, right? It's a very popular thing to say. But how do you actually use that in a way that's productive? Because you hear that all the time. You know, you can hear, hey, fatso, eat a salad and you'll lose weight. Okay, sure. I agree with you, but I don't like salad. You know, it's more nuanced than that. So, I mean, what do you think about actually applying that advice? You know, looking at your losses, you know, having the will to look at your losses and to really delve into the very vulnerable process of acknowledging your shortcomings and correcting them.
So it's interesting. I don't want to get too spiritual or philosophical here.
It's never stopped us in the past, Abby.
But I will talk about something that is a really, really important concept to not only competitive Smash, but life in general. The removal of the ego is one of the most talked about concepts in spirituality and religion. The disassociation of your actions or of your accomplishments or of your pursuits from yourself. I think that following this advice and following the teachings from whatever spiritual or religious thing or religious thing that you follow, or if you don't follow any at all, the most important thing to take away from those lessons is the fact that you need to remove your ego when you walk in to look at your play. The problem with coming in with expectations or basically preconceived thoughts about yourself is that you will never be able to look at your games and to rewatch your VODs with a learning and growth mindset. You have to watch your VODs as if you're not the one playing. And that's one of the most important things. Every time you give yourself criticism, you have to give criticism as if a friend asked you to give them tips or look at your play. And the reason this is so important is because oftentimes we're more honest with other people than we are with ourselves. It's a really strange concept, but when you watch yourself play, you're going to justify certain actions that you do because you were there in that moment experiencing that thing.
Right. When, I mean, I'll cite the phenomenon. Sorry to jump in there. I'll cite the phenomenon where, like, statistically speaking, people are much more likely to perfectly fulfill a medical prescription for their dog than they are for themselves.
Really?
Yes. And the basis of it all is when people have a responsibility to fulfill, they fulfill it, especially if they find, you know, in this instance, their dog or their child, you know, precious. They will make sure it's attended to. But they don't look at themselves from the same perspective. They don't treat themselves as this being that needs to be taken care of.
Exactly. That's why this disassociation of the ego is so important.
And I'd like you guys to apply that to your play. You know, when you see yourself getting exposed in a VOD, or even if you're just playing a local, you know, or a local friendly with a friend, and you get bodied, you know, save the replay. Give it a watch, and watch it like the child you were meant to nourish, right? And watch it from this perspective of objective truths. And a loss is such a gift from the viewing perspective, because you can literally in real time watch your bad habits getting beaten out of you. And if you can do so through that objective lens that we're talking about, there is so much knowledge, so many golden nuggets to be plucked from the earth when watching yourself getting exposed.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful way to put it. At least it's a little visceral, but it's a really cool way to put it. You can like watch yourself get these habits beaten out of you. I think that's a really great way to put it. I think another analogy would be when you're driving by yourself, you're often a little more reckless than when you have people in the car.
Yeah, it's cool. Great. Yeah, I mean, it's not cool, but that's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, it's like if you're on the highway alone at night, you'll likely hit 85, and it's like, but if you have your friends there, you're staying at 79.
Yeah, that's right. If we ever drive together, I'm buckling you up twice, and I'm putting you I'm right in front of the airbag, right, buddy? You ever see that scene from The Blind Side?
I've seen The Blind Side. I don't remember it all.
Oh,
too well,
the wonderful left tackle. I forgot his name. He stuck his arm out. He saved the little white boy. You remember that?
No, I don't.
All right. Well, either way, you're getting saved, Abby. I just want to let you know that, all right?
I care about you. I trust you.
But, Abby, I was hoping that you could walk us down the... when you lose, it can often be an emotional process. We touched on it earlier. I want you to kind of walk us through the stages of what that actually looks like in real time. You know, will you walk us through that?
Through the steps of loss.
Sure.
I think a lot of people often refer to loss or grief or any type of failure with this very common 5-step model, also known as the Kubler-Ross model. The stages of grief.
You said the Kubler-Ross model?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that this is a very overused thing in society. The denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance model.
The stages of grief.
I actually think that any of these things just happen like randomly. Like I actually think it's more of a mixed bag. It's like you pull out. It's like you just like put into the bag, like they just put your hand into the bag right after you lost, and you just get any one of these things.
So it isn't like a sequential process. Like you don't deny your loss, then are angry about it. Then you're just saying you will randomly be confronted with any of these emotions.
Yeah, and I don't know if the model accounts for this. I think it likely does, because it sounds like a reasonable thing. But like, I've seen some people go straight to bargaining, or straight to depression, or like straight to acceptance. Like, and the thing is, how do we circumvent this model, right? Because no one wants to go through each one of these steps every single time.
Yeah.
How do we make it like a really repetitive process that we can just like algorithmically walk ourselves through every time,
right?
And there's no way to do that.
you think there's a zero solution?
there's no way to algorithmically do it. I wanted to go through this just to say that our emotions are so contextual at any given moment. There's sometimes when you have when you have like a very like simple loss, it was like a good game and you feel pretty good about the way that you played. There's no animosity. There's no emotions that were in the match. And you pretty much go straight to acceptance and you just go get out of bracket, go play some friendlies, and then you leave the venue and you're like reasonably happy with the way that you played. Whereas there's going to be other people who are just every single time they're super competitive about every single loss and they're never happy with the way that they played. I can't really prescribe a specific solution to everyone, which is why, as we say every time on this show, introspection is the key to victory. I think that understanding yourself, understanding your goals, understanding why you feel the things that you do is absolutely more important than prescribing to any specific like step process to healing.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that I have crafted the solution to losing.
Really?
Is that bold to say?
That is very bold. I'd like to hear it.
So it comes back down. So like you said, it all starts with introspection. It starts with identifying why you play the game and what you want out of it, right? So let's say your goal is to be the number one on your PR in your region, right? You want to be the best around, right? And you have to, at that point, you have to contextualize everything you do as a step in order to fulfill that journey. So this match against my rival, against my bracket demon, is not my match against this bracket demon. It is now one of the many steps I will take to accomplishing my broader goal. I think when you kind of compartmentalize each stage of the process of fulfilling your larger goal, you can really start to lean on the mechanics of goal achievement, right? So when you take that L, when you hold that L, you can say, look, man, maybe I needed to lose this match. I needed to be exposed. I can watch this match back and look at why I lost. And now I can apply that knowledge later to accomplish my greater goal of getting that number one spot on the PR, right? And sure, I'm not saying that after that loss against your bracket demon, you're not going to have any sort of griefing period. But instead of having all these stages of denial, bargaining, depression, acceptance, all that stuff, what's going to happen is you're going to have frustration. You're going to say, man, I'm not quite there yet. This is not the day where I have fulfilled my goal. I'm not quite at the level to be the best around because I'm still losing to these same people. Okay, that sucks, but I'm using this as, this might not be the final step, but it is a step in my journey. That is how I personally contextualize my losses, and I've had a lot of success with it, I think. What do you think about that line of thinking, Abby?
I think that you have figured out the formula for yourself. I think that the thing that I would poke you on, and the reason I'd say it's not necessarily a solution for everyone, is that everyone's goals are different. Not everyone wants to be the best around, and not everyone looks to be the number one player, especially because of how like bottom heavy the Smash scene is by nature and by the obvious nature of double elimination brackets. True. I think that for someone whose goal is simply to get on PR, or someone's goal whose goal is simply to beat this one other individual, none of these steps that you described will automatically relate to that goal.
Nah, well, that's fair.
See, and that's like that's the really interesting part, is because like, let's just say that this one player who has this bracket demon that always beats them, it's like this player can be the number one player who's like always winning every single time. But whenever it's like they're number one in their region, they are beating everyone. But this one player, whenever they run into that player in bracket, every single time, they're losing. And their goal is simply to beat this other player. Every other step of the journey is no longer about, is not, is like, it's like a lot of it is hard to like tie in to beating this one player. It's like when you're playing friendlies with someone who doesn't maybe play that same character that the demon plays or play the same play style, suddenly that's like removed from the context of beating that player. So like how would, I think my question to you is like, how would you recontextualize this loss handling process for people with different goals?
Right. Well, that's a great question. And I think my answer to that is, when you look at how do I get over losses better, how do I become a better loser, you can't just look at how do I deal with the loss. You have to also look at what contextualizes your loss, right? So you mentioned the fact that someone's goal might be just to beat this one specific demon. You know, this is their goal. They want to beat this. Maybe this douchebag stole his girlfriend. You know what I mean?
It's always a Bowser player. It's always
this Bowser player. He's smelly. You know, your favorite movie is Die Hard. His isn't. You know what I mean? He likes Harry Potter. You like Twilight. You know what I mean? You're really just arch enemies. And your goal is to beat this guy, right? Or girl. At that point, yeah, a loss to him is going to be terrible for you. It's going to be like going through hell. When you put all your eggs in this one basket, I don't think there is a solution for you. That loss is going to suck. And sure, maybe you can, you know, use that as kind of a life lesson, as you can use that to toughen up, you know? You can try to recontextualize it that way. But if you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket, and I would encourage you not to, I think it's important to make a broader goal, to pursue something more broadly, so that any individual loss is less gut-wrenching.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I think that you approached it really well in answering that, in the sense that we don't really need to tackle the idea of handling that really, really harsh loss.
Yeah, that's going to be one that'll push you towards the rum bottle for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I think the important thing to do is to understand how we can prevent that from happening. And I absolutely agree. Diversifying your interest portfolio, like making sure that your goals are spread out, that your hobbies and your interests in the game are spread out, is one of the most important things in not only improving as a player, but also feeling enjoyment and getting satisfaction from being able to reach all of these micro goals.
Yeah, man. Well, I think we did a great job of wrapping that up. You know, and we've talked a lot about, you know, what it takes to be a good loser, how to benefit most from losing. You know, but on the flip side of that, you mentioned it briefly earlier, there's a lot to take away from getting those W's too. You know, so what makes a good winner to you? Like, who are the best kinds of winners? What does it take?
When I think about good winners, I think, I don't know why, but I immediately think of Armada.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know why. I'm just drawn to like Armada's like mentality as, and it's a real shame that he's retired from Melee, and I think he had probably one of the, if not the most iconic careers in Super Smash Bros. Melee. But I really love his approach to every single match, regardless of whether it's winning or losing. When he wins, it's not as if he won everything. It's not as if he, like, if that was everything to him. Similarly with how Zero continued his gigantic win streak, there was always something to learn from winning. He would still always go analyze his matches, even if he's winning over and over again, he wouldn't get complacent. And I think that's what made him a really dominant quote unquote god in the game for a long time. And
See, I always thought it was just silky smooth blonde hair.
You know what? I think you're onto something there. But I like this saying that I've had a lot of times in school, is that just because you got an A on a test doesn't mean you got 100. Often you get a 95 or a 96 when you, and like relating this to a win, like when you get a win, it's you're getting like a fairly high score. However, these points add up. Like if you get a 94 somewhere, 95 somewhere, and a 96 somewhere, that's 6, 5, and 4 points. That's basically a total of 15 points that are gone.
I love that analogy so much. That's so sick. I think that's perfect. I think that perfectly describes it. Just because you win doesn't mean you played perfectly. And that is such a huge statement. You know, when you win a match, I want you to know why you won. And I want you to know what shortcomings your opponent had and what they didn't punish of yours. You know, I see a lot of people win. And for instance, I'll do something where I'll play a match as Cloud and I'll spam a couple options the whole game. I'll never get punished for them, so I won't adapt. And I'll hear the commentators or somebody else say, wow, you know, Peon did that option a lot. Like, you know, all you have to do is punish that option and you'll beat him. But the thing is, when I play, I very much am cognizant of, okay, this is what I'm getting away with. I know I'm getting away with it, but until he punishes me, I'm just gonna keep doing it, whatever, you know. And that is important to think in such a way where you know why you won. You know, and if you had a bad habit throughout the match, if you just spammed an option, or if you, you know, kept tech rolling in or something, you know, and it never got punished, I need you to know that. Because suddenly you'll play against a better opponent and they're not going to let you get away with it.
Absolutely. Like, I definitely see that in your play a lot, and you are definitely very aware of that. And you've all been very vocal of that in the past, which I respect a lot. I think that something I've seen in my play, I think for a long time, I was a Sheik main, and then randomly, like, I was really sick of like playing really stressful games over and over again because I played Sheik. So I wanted a character that I'd be really consistent with. So I just spent 2 weeks in the lab and I picked up Donkey Kong. And then the first tournament I went to, I literally won the first tournament. It was like 40 people. And I won the first tournament I went to with the character I've been playing for 2 weeks.
Yeah, bro, you beat me in Losers Finals to your like day one Donkey Kong.
And that was the funniest thing. A lot of people were really mad that day.
I was pissed.
But I thought I was hot shit, and that's the problem. I had so many flaws in my play that because I won and I didn't take anything away from that win other than the fact that, yo, my Donkey Kong is sick. I had so many issues in my play that persisted for like 3 to 4 months. I got away with just spamming grab, I think, like the entire time. And there were so many like nuances about DK and about the way that you play neutral that I was not appreciating at all. In fact, that might have been the reason why I won, because it was just so ridiculous the way that I played. So like that is something that is kind of a personal experience of the fact that because I got this positive reinforcement from really bad habits that I developed, I continued to do them for a very long time. And it took a long time for my play to really develop as like a DK main. And it took a long time to really understand that DK had more kill options and more options than just spamming, than just like basically spamming grab and looking for ding dong every single game.
Yeah, man. And I think just to piggyback off that, you know, especially when you're in a situation where you play the same kind of people over and over again. Let's say you're a top player and you're running into the same kind of people each and every major, right? Or more realistically so, pardon me, more realistically so, you're a member of a local scene. And, you know, if you're playing a lot of local Smash, you run into the same opponents day, you know, week in, week out. And if you beat them 1 week, you have to understand, especially if they're, you know, good players, maybe the other kind of PR people in your region, they're going to be thinking about why they lost. They're going to be labbing the matchup. They're going to be looking at VODs. So you have to know why you won so that you can understand why they lost, you know, and how they're going to approach the match next time. I think that's something that's really never spoken about and very vital. It's something that I take very seriously. If I beat someone 1 week for one habit, I know, you know, next week they're probably going to adjust, and I need to, you know, be able to beat them in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that's so important. I think you really hit something that's like super cool. It's like, it's just as in game when you go for a read and you hit the read, like the next time you know that they're going to do some that they're going to switch it up. So you switch it up and you hit that read too. I think it's very similar to that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like an out of game read versus an in game read. I think honestly, the meta for both of those types of reads are very similar.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm with you there. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. I mean, when we talk about like, yeah, beyond, like literally beyond the like the medic.
Like, passes like, yeah, joint.
we're on something else, but it's honestly so true. Like we view the game as this like insular, isolated system, but there's so many things that we can take out of it and pull out of it and basically create analogs to real life, our development as players, and how we can really improve our understanding and enjoyment of this craft.
Right, man, right. And you know, I just want to take a moment before we finish up this discussion just to touch on the real world applications of all of this. You know, if I think Smash, one of the best things it does, especially for the younger people, you know, there's a lot of gamers stereotypically aren't really into sports, don't aren't involved in many other competitive outlets, and they use gaming to fulfill that competitive need. You know, I've heard it said that every person for that matter needs to draw a sword in some capacity. Everybody has their own war, their own battle to fight, and a lot of Smashers, for them, that fight is Smash. This is their arena, right? And this is their opportunity to learn from defeat. This is their opportunity to ride the waves of the highs and lows, the emotional roller coaster that is success and defeat, that kind of ebb and flow of consciousness, right? Happiness and shortcomings and how that all balances out. I think it's important to really kind of grasp and to be cognizant of this whole process, to understand that there's a lot to be learned in the face of adversity. You know, when you are at your lowest, when you have your biggest shortcomings as a player, you're kind of like forging this armor in your character, and it'll help you later in other adversity in your life in general. And I think it's an important lesson to take into account and to admire, to appreciate, you know, accept it as medicine and know that it's just arming you for future circumstances.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I think you really brought that out really well. And I think we have wrapped up this topic for the week. I think what we're going to do now is we're going to jump into some of the Twitter questions that we've received.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, just off the bat, these are the worst questions we've gotten thus far.
I think that we're going to still address them, but we're going to somehow turn them into productive conversation.
Oh, we'll do it. We'll do it.
All right. we got three questions. The first one's from Louis B. Losing sucks. I wish I always won.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that, Dane?
Louis B is completely correct, first off. All right. So next question. We have Fastulio the guy. He says, do you think it's good to always ask for tips? Or do you think sometimes it's better to look at yourself and figure out your mistakes on your own?
So that's a legitimate question. Yeah. I think that it's really important to not just say at the end of friendly sessions, hey, can I get some tips? Like, I actually see that really often. And a lot of the time, like, top players or really good players that you ask for tips, they're not gonna like be looking out for every single mistake that you're making. They're gonna be internalizing a lot of these things a lot of the reads that they made on you, they might like memorize a few of them and be able to spout them out to you. But I think the most important thing you can do when you're playing a really good player and you want to ask them for advice is like introspect and understand what you've already needed to improve on, so that when you ask them about a certain topic, like that you'd be able to give some like backing to your question about tips, and they would be able to respond with a much more contextualized answer. An example of this would be, if you feel like your punish game is lacking, you'd ask them, did you feel like there were any moments where I didn't punish to the extent of which you should have been that you should have been punished for? Then they can look back and look for specific moments. They can say, okay, I can like formulate a reasonable answer. And in that sense, I think it is always good to ask for tips. Like, top players love it, at least ones that I've interacted with. And when people have asked me for advice, I always enjoy it when people ask very directed and very specific questions. I think it's always good to ask questions like that. In terms of looking at stuff yourself and answering questions on your own, like we've talked about in this episode, I think there's a lot to understand on your own, and understanding where you messed up, where you got hit, where you lost neutral, where you didn't push punishes enough is absolutely important. And I think both looking at external and internal sources is the key to improving.
Yeah, I did a great job answering the question. I just want to follow up real quick, because we don't have that many questions this week. Pesto, I think that a big thing is, if you're fighting against like a top player, or let's say like a character specialist, you know, some guy who's like a solo Rob player, you know, asking questions like, hey, when, let's say it's the Rob, you know, when your gyro was at ledge, what does it cover? What can I do to get past it? And what really annoys you that like someone that masters the Rob matchup can do to get around that top? Like what does a Rob player not want to see in that situation? Stuff like that, really directed specific questions that even if you're not a top player, you know, something that they can answer, they alone can answer, right? You really want to get the most out of your questions. And yeah, that's all I have to add.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think that's a really good point. I didn't think of that, but now that I think about that, I think understanding specific things about matchups is so important, and getting like little factoids and little tidbits here and there is like really key, especially in Smash 4 with a lot of characters, and in Ultimate where there's going to be a ridiculous amount of characters.
Dude, it's going to be crazy, man. It's going to be crazy.
So like, because there's so many matchups, like even knowing like these small tidbits of data and of information are just going to give you such a leg up on the competition. And we got our final question from Super Sega. He says, DLC.
So Super Sega, fantastic Rosalina player, actually taking out Dark Shad. Shoutouts to him. A longtime legend. He definitely has destroyed me and Abby plenty of times in bracket back when we were scrubs. Abby did get the last laugh, though. Just got to say, shout out to my boy. But yeah, man. If you're a Rosalina or a Villager player, you probably lost because of DLC, it's safe to say.
Not much to say there. Really quality questions.
Thanks, Super Sega. Abby, actually, you did say last question, but I do want to bring up, you know, this question is not really topical based on what we talked about today, but I do want to shout out him anyway, because it was a legitimate question, at least. And it wasn't in our designated thread, but it was just a random question asked to our Twitter from Attack Raccoon. At Attack Raccoon. Attack Raccoon says, as someone who wants to start competing in Smash seriously when Ultimate comes out, when's one best way to use my time until it's released? Play a lot of Smash 4, watch tourney vids, take it easy to lessen the chance of burnout. Thanks. Abby, what do you think, man?
I think that it is a really good question, and something that a lot of people are probably going to be thinking about in terms of managing their time. As we've talked about on this show before, to kind of recapitulate that, Smash 4, there's going to be some things that cross over. There's going to be the neutral game. There's going to be thinking about the game. There's going to be thinking about reads, thinking about punishes, thinking about frame data. So this framework, this huge framework that you've built, should be able to be ported into the new game. However, there will be rebuilding, but you want to be able to just create this really nice framework of mentality, like this, the growth mindset, understanding how to move on from losses, how to move on from wins, how you learn as a player, whether your character matches yourself, and how to know whether you're basically maximizing your chances of winning if you really want to be a competitor in the new game. I think it's really important to still keep playing the game. I think that you don't need to burn yourself out and play that much, because obviously there's going to be a lot of new stuff that comes out. But definitely kind of just keep some things familiar and keep yourself a little fresh. I would advise against playing the game a ridiculous amount. What would you think? Well, what do you suggest, Peon?
Yeah, so I will bring this. I'll tell a story to answer this question. So there's this classic tale of the Renaissance art patron. He really wanted to get a self-portrait done by a Renaissance painter. So he goes to the painter and says, "Hey, I want a self-portrait. How long do you think it'll take you to complete the project?" And the painter says, "I have no idea. It could take me a year. It could take me 20 years. So the artist says, "Okay, take your time. No worries. I'll pay you a handsome sum of money. And I just want a really high quality painting of myself." So a year passes. The guy goes back to the artist. Artist says, "Oh, it's not quite done yet. I need more time." 5 years passed. Same answer. 10 years passed. Same answer. Finally, 20 years later, the rich guy comes and he says, "Hey, man, look, where's my self-portrait? I really need it done." So the painter says, "Okay, sit down." And the painter, in just 5 minutes, paints the most beautiful painting of this man ever that you could possibly imagine. And the rich guy is furious. He says, "Come on, guy. You made me wait 20 years and you painted this thing in 5 minutes. And the artist says, he walks over to his cabinet and he opens up his cabinet and just a bunch of paintings just spill out of this man. And the moral of the story is that the artist spent 20 years learning how to paint this painting perfectly. He didn't spend 20 years painting this one painting. And that's what I want you to do with your Smash skills. I want you, if you want to become amazing at Smash Ultimate, I want you to become amazing at Smash 4 in the meantime. And like Abby said, you'll learn how to become amazing at a game, and that those skills will carry over in Ultimate.
Yeah, that was a really interesting anecdote. So is the moral of the story that you should just keep practicing?
Yeah, just become the best version of yourself now, and you'll be the best version of yourself later.
That's fair. There's a lot of really cool analogies there and metaphors for the self. I like that. I like that a lot. Thanks for sharing that.
I don't know where I heard that, but it's been bouncing around my brain for I don't know if I came up with that, if I heard that somewhere. I really don't know. I would cite the source if I knew it.
I would not be surprised if you came up with that. All right. I think that's going to be it for today. So you can find us at Beyond Metagame on Twitter. You can find me at A Vaidyanatha, A and then my long last name, which I always talk about. And where can everyone find you, Dane?
Yeah, so I am at Peon, Peon underscore GCE. That's Golf Charlie Echo for all you military folk. And guys, I just want to thank you one last time for tuning in. This podcast keeps growing and growing. And our listener base has been so receptive and interested and engaged. And we're just really humbled by all the support. And we appreciate all the questions, all the participation. And we appreciate this whole community that we've really started to form. It's been a great place to have constructive conversation. And we all seem to have each other's back and all have each other's best interest in mind. And it's been really fun to be a part of. And on that front, I actually want to announce That in the coming weeks, we're going to officially launch a community Discord. So in this Discord, you know, we're going to invite, it's going to be open to every listener, and it's just going to be a place for us to all, you know, just chat, you know, come talk to us. We can talk about the game, talk about whatever, you know, share some anecdotes, share some information once Ultimate drops, or about any Smash game now. And it'll just be a cool hub for all these like-minded folk to get together and to better each other.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll be really cool to get everyone talking constructively about the game and stuff outside of the game to improve as a whole. I think there's a lot to be said about interacting as a community and the gains you can get from understanding how people's like practice methodology is, or like how people take losses, or how people learn tech, like stuff that we've talked about. I think there's a lot to gain from different perspectives on that, and not just our perspectives, even though we've taken a lot of time to analyze these topics and bring out the basically the our best versions of this for you guys.
Sure thing. So that is all this time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.